The Florida Capital T. My name is Anna Marie. This is our preliminary prop podcast, and this is
the pilot.
Yeah, the pilot episode. And I'm sitting down with Scott Mazur from the Teachers Union.
Yes, Leon Classroom Teachers Association, LCTA. Kind of name talks about teachers, but it incorporates more than teachers. We have media specialists, deans, guidance counselors, school psychologists, SLPs, OTs, PTs.
Wow.
So the definition of who's included is defined by what our bargaining rights are with the Public Employee Relations Commission, which is PERC. And they're the corporation or the organization that conducts the votes for contracts. Becoming a bargaining agent, and then now with the new anti-union state laws to maintain the bargaining rights.
Yeah, and with the state laws, can you kind of explain what those new, I guess, regulations are for that for you guys?
Yeah, so in the past, it was you just negotiated, and once you secured the rights, there was the opportunity for outside agencies to, you know, challenge it, to become a bargaining agent as well, you know, that type of stuff. But the state legislature started to put thresholds on it, you know, making it 50% membership. And then it became get rid of the dues deduction with the district, which was the other law that passed. And then now Senate Bill 1296 says you need to maintain 60% membership or else people don't necessarily want to have a union. And then if you don't have 60%, you have to go to an election, and 50% of the bargaining unit has to vote. And if only 49, you lose the contract immediately. So you have to have 50% of the bargaining unit vote and the majority of that vote to keep the contract. The numbers are strategic because most of the people that have turned out to vote to maintain their contract previously was not at 50%. An example would be LCTA last year or the previous election was 24.8% turnout with 98% wanting to keep their contract. And if you just look at regular elections with candidates, I mean, that's pretty good percentage that showed up when you look at how many people vote in like primaries and things like that. But now it's become, you know, a focal point for the state. For us, there's a lot of stresses because we understand that the bargaining rights that we secured are like 50 years old. So the stewardship of maintaining the rights that were secured way back when is something now in our hands for future educators 50 years from now.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much where we are as a state. The unfortunate thing is that individuals who chose not to be a part of their union had the right to still have the rights of their union.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the right to work state. You didn't have to join, but you could still benefit from the rights. You still got the salary increases. You still got the, you know, the health care benefits,
yeah,
whatever it was. And now the state has basically said, if you're not a part of your union, you don't deserve those rights. So it seems like less freedom because you're forcing people to do something at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. And whenever you're bargaining, I mean, you've said it before, you represent all the employees.
Mm-hmm.
You're not just representing, you know, the members, you're representing everybody because everyone benefits. And so,
and I think there's a, for folks that are not members, you know, there's sometimes people that call up and they're like, you work for us. And it's like, well, no, not necessarily. You benefit from what we do, but we work for our members.
Yeah.
So our members have a voice through it. And if you want a voice, you can become a member. But we don't necessarily work for people. It's like saying like you would work for someone that doesn't pay for the work, right?
Right, right.
So for a group of individuals that, you know, capitalism and, you know, you have to pay to get a good and all these things, there's a lot of dichotomies.
Yeah, yeah. So what are some of the things that the members have been able to vote on?
Well, I mean, every year, whenever we negotiate, they're voting to ratify the contract.
Okay.
You know, negotiations are, I had one chief negotiator on the opposite side of us one time say that, you know, if both groups walk away unhappy, it's a good negotiation.
Right? I think I heard that.
Yeah. I don't like it because that means that how collaborative are we being to actually benefit everybody and
right,
do good work, right? If there's a need, like for example, caseloads for our ESE teachers, we've provided a matrix, right, that says no more than this many cases, ESE students, and we scaled it out between how severe the needs were so
yeah.
that there was a caseload cap, and then above that, then you get paid extra, but at least we know that the students are going to receive the services they want.
Right.
There's just not a will to do something like that. And a lot of times it's kind of said that we don't have the resources to do it, X, Y, Z. But if we know that it's a need, part of what we're trying to kind of communicate with Leon County Schools, and I think we've gotten a lot better with it between the two of us, is that don't just say no. Like, say, we can't do that, but we can do this.
Right.
Or, you know what, we can't do it right now, but let's talk about it next year. Our goal is to get A, B, and C in place. And then we can kind of talk about how it looks.
Yeah, you actually said during one negotiation, you said you're leaving free stuff on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to clarify what you meant by that.
Right.
But I liked what you were saying, because you were saying there's all these things that you can do that that doesn't cost the district any money, but that still benefit the teachers and makes working conditions better for everyone who's working under them.
I mean, miserable work environments reduce productivity, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're just trying to make life better for everybody at the end of the day, that, you know, that just because you're a teacher doesn't mean that you're not a parent, doesn't
mm-hmm.
mean you're not a taxpayer, doesn't mean you're not a member of the community. You still have things that you're trying to accomplish. And if the thought process is that you're going to give everything and anything to sacrifice for your classroom,
yeah,
then what about my family, my kids, my well-being? And it creates turnover at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I kind of see it a little bit in just this, like, with the community and the parents and neighbors that I've talked to, just about feeling as if they're not being heard, feeling as if, you know, when they go, it's just not a fun environment to be in. And so I think that making small changes, even if they, you know, aren't big changes, but they're just small and in ways that maybe they don't financially impact the district big, but it just makes it a better environment to be there for everybody.
And it's not, sometimes it's just a vision, right?
Mm-hmm.
With site-based decision making, and we have a lot of great administrators, right? And I want to make sure that it's very clear. There are a lot of really great people in Leon County Schools,
right? Yeah.
Vast majority. Folks are trying to do the right thing, right? But in terms of a vision, it's not a vision of Leon County Schools, it's site-based. So it's Hawkshire's vision, it's Godby vision, it's Fairview vision, it's all these different visions. And, you know, one of the things that I've said to Superintendent Hannah is, like, Chick-fil-A this thing up. Like, no matter what school you walk into, you should be greeted the same way. The demeanor of the staff should be the same. There should be an expectation of customer service. Same way with teachers, right? That you don't want to have call up about your kid and then, you know, have a disgruntled, you know, conversation about something. It's
yeah.
It's people often just want to be heard. And when you hear them and you tell them the why behind what the choice is after it, even if it's not what they want, most often they will go ahead and, you know, understand at least. And then now, what's the next step?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
What's the next step? If we can't, then how do I advocate for the next thing?
Mm-hmm. One of the jobs I used to work at did training on, they call it like the WOW, you know,
yeah.
WOW training, you
yeah.
know, and it was something so simple as just like, I mean, because I was a paramedic and like,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to call another ambulance service, right?
Right,
like
right.
I'm the only ambulance service, but it was really important that,
mm-hmm.
that we treated people with respect and that we, you know, we even got awards for it, right? We got these WOW awards because that's how important it is. And one of the things that was said was that you can give really bad patient care, but if you have a really good bedside manner,
mm-hmm.
you'll never see a complaint. Whereas if you are really, you could be the best patient care,
mm-hmm.
but have really bad bedside manner,
right.
and you will still see complaint after complaint after complaint because of your demeanor, you know? And I just find that so interesting because I see that with the district where, you know, I've reached out and I don't get responses, or, you know, I don't, you know, get, the answers I'm looking for, or I don't even, it seems as if they're not really wanting to provide answers. And just how much further that goes whenever you have somebody who's willing to sit down and talk to you and just explain things to you. I think most of our neighbors just want to know what's going on.
Right.
The biggest thing is communication.
Yes. And I think if you ask the district themselves, that is an area that they still struggle with. Because the thing is, and I remember when I first started working at Killarney Lakes Elementary School, I had come from Alachua County. First year was at High Springs Elementary School. Come here, work at Killarney Lakes. Something had happened at school, and within like a minute, the neighborhood knew. And it's very similar in terms of Leon County schools, that how you conduct yourself and the way that you maintain information confidentiality or whatever, then causes them to then go Facebook, get it out there or in some different way. And it's a culture thing to some degree, right? It's not easy. Listen, leadership is hard. I mean, it's not like what you think it is. Like, there's a lot of tripping and falling, and this guy has tripped and fallen a lot. Like, I am only have the perspective that I have now because I've messed up so many times. And I think that's kind of what we're missing sometimes about teaching. When I first started, so background was I wanted to be a teacher all along. My dad told me I couldn't raise a family with it, so I became an engineer. I entered engineering. I didn't become an engineer. And after 2 years in college, I was miserable with kind of thinking like this is what it's going to be like. And so I went to my parents and I said, I'm starting the College of Education. I don't care. I'm going to elementary ed. I really want to do this. And at the time before, I had been a gymnastics coach. I was like the head coach at the North Florida YMCA, working with students. I'd worked with kids all through high
Cool.
school. And I told my mom, I'm going to be the greatest teacher in the world first day, right? And I'm like so confident of it. And she goes, yeah, sure, we'll see. And so I think about 3 years later, 5 years later, and then 10 and then 13, like each time I came back and I go, oh, I learned a couple things. And I think that's what we're missing in education is our educators are not sticking around. And they're not able to make some mistakes and grow. And the same thing happens in our classrooms too. Everyone's so focused on this data that kids can't be kids and kind of explore. And rather than worrying about up, 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 it's what's the trend line? There's always going to be some downside. There's going to be some upside. But are they trending in the right direction? And what are we doing to respond to that? That means time. Right? That means not focusing on these data meetings to the intensity that we are. I didn't have those data meetings. I did my own data meetings. And that's what professional educators do. They do their own data analysis. They look at it, they reflect on it, and they respond to their students. And I
So
think
all
that's.
those so all those years in high school when the teacher would put up everyone's scores and they'd show you like everyone, like as like a group, it's like, oh, that's because she was doing her own data analysis of
Well, some of it, yeah.
it.
And I think the key thing is remember there's you don't always become a teacher because of the teacher you had that made you feel like, man, that's great. Sometimes you kind of teach because someone made you feel a different way and you said, I don't want anyone to ever feel that way in a classroom. I've got those experiences. Ninth grade, I was an SLD kid, couldn't get my B's and D's right and stuff. And so, second grade, kids would go one direction for gifted, and I'd go the other. And I resented it because I wanted to do the projects and stuff, right? So, high school, we knew high school opened up, and I put an H next to math as we're going into sophomore year. And the teacher scoffed and erased the H and sent me back to my desk. And so, agency has been one of my big things all along, and I didn't really kind of think about it, so I started reflecting. I put an H next to math, science, and English. And I ended up in honors classes I should never have been in. But I was like, I want to do this. The students that I was around were not nearly as focused and stuff in some of those other classes. I wanted to challenge myself, but they weren't letting me necessarily. And so I just somehow made it happen myself. And I know that that English teacher in my sophomore year was like, how the heck did this guy get here? It was the hardest scene that I got, but it was only one. And then I figured out how to kind of manage it. But that's the type of teacher that I want to be, wanted to be, and that I think that we as a community deserve. And you don't get those people to come and be a part of it and stay unless you create the fertile ground for it.
And so one of the things that we were talk about a lot recently is the budget and making sure that our educators are getting paid. I personally feel that whenever you pay your employees well and you treat them with respect, that's the sign of a good leader. That's a quote that I had heard, and it's just resonated with me. What are your thoughts on the budget?
Well, let's be honest about the budget. Like, the budget is a byproduct of a state that is trying to destroy public education. I get it that folks want choice. Parents, like, even as a parent, like, there are certain times where, I'm going, man, like, I wouldn't have done it that way, but you're the teacher and we're going to support and we're going to go through this and we're going to get where we need to be. That's called life. Like, you deal with everybody. It's never going to be butterfly and moonbeams and fairy tales all the time. But at the same time, when a state is actively defunding public education and only doing an increase of 1 to 2%, but inflation goes 3, 4, you're always falling behind. Then you take $6 billion or whatever it is out of the public schools. Like, it was in your reserves, but you decided to put it somewhere else rather than public schools. And you give these vouchers. And the thing is, it's not about being anti-voucher. The same quality of education that I wanted my students to have in a public school, I want students to have in a private and a charter school,
And a homeschool.
in a homeschool. And the thing is, how do we know that we are trying to keep a similar standard? What is the standard? Are we all being held accountable to the same thing? I think the accountability issue is the biggest part of it all. And so, people are like, well, you're taking something from me if you take the voucher. Vouchers are here. We just have to get a better handle on how we're doing it. What was it? The Auditor General even gave recommendations to the legislature this past year that said, here's all the gaps. And the legislature said, oh, squirrel. They didn't do anything about it because they don't want to do anything about it because they are benefiting in some way. Who benefits is kind of the
The
term,
question,
right?
yeah.
Yeah. And and it's not our communities. It really isn't, because we've lost so much talent from Leon County to other states to other professions. And I'm a firm believer that you can take an educator worth their salt, and they can make three times as much in the private sector because the multitasking, the all the different things that they have to take
All of
care
you guys have
of.
degrees. Like, I mean, y'all aren't just
Well, it's
like,
customer service, it's psychologist, it's social worker.
yeah.
You're taking on so many different hats within that space. So we really have to look at the state budget first. But in 2013, I was nationally board certified teacher. I got it just before they stopped giving money. So I was like, I'm nationally board certified. And there used to be money tied to it. And I was like, oh, they stopped it? Okay. All right. That's great. So I was a little in my feelings about that. And then it came out, there's no salary increase. And I was like, oh, heck no. What are we doing? Like, meaning that there are state choices, but then there's local choices that, like, you hear Board Member Jones always talk, like, you want to know someone's their priorities, look at their checkbook, right? A budget is a moral document of what you care about, right? And in education, we got to care about people. Now, the slippery slope of this is the moral grandstanding, right? Where someone's like, oh, it's for the kids, it's for the kids. And it is. They would not be there if it was not for the kids, right? I mean, come on. So at the end of the day, it is about the kids, but then it kind of comes to another level of when do we stop caring about kids when they're adults? So we stop caring about people all of a sudden just because you aged out of being cared about? Like at some point in time, it's everybody within a system, regardless of their age. And when you show respect equally, then everybody understands, do unto other and all the different things that are a part of how to treat people the right way. So there's the state budget part. Then there's the local one. And so I sent a letter out to the nationally board certified teachers, and within 48 hours, I was in Jackie Ponce's office. I got a phone call from the president at the time of the LCTA, David Worrell, and he goes, Superintendent would like to meet you. And I wasn't on the bargaining team. I was a member of LCTA, right? So I go, and this kind of goes back to maybe the agency of the H's and stuff, but we had a conversation, and I'm not intimidated in those situations. Sometimes I go like, how the heck did I get here? Kind of thing. But his question was, why did you write the letter to not vote for the contract? I said, because it's my right and I don't agree with what was negotiating. And I think something could be done for the people within the district. Even anything at some point in time when things are so bad, and it goes back to communication and the why and all that other stuff, right? But nobody likes to hear no, especially just before a bargaining session like this. That was a long time. But anyway, so within a month, I was in DC at a Common Core training. 3 months later, I was co-chief negotiator. Next year, I was chief negotiator. Then I was like, and I remember I walked into, I was District 5 director, and I walked into David Worrell's office and I said, I'm running for president. He was running too. He looked at me like, huh? I'm like, yeah. But to David's credit, he was a good leader. He had his style, but he was a good leader because I lost by 4 votes as kind of an unknown person. And he took me under his wing and taught me everything about how things were working and helped me kind of better understand what it
It
would
wasn't
be.
personal. It was, hey, let's.
I think it's hard for anything like that not to be personal at some point. But he was mature enough and had enough vision to understand, you know what? I'm not gonna be here forever. This guy really thinks, he wants to do it, so let me kind of support in a way that I can, and I'm forever grateful for that. So that's how I got involved in the union negotiations and all that. So local budgets, though, is like a conundrum to me because it's we have shown different places, we have talked about different things, but I will say that there's a pattern that's of concern. The pattern is to come out with a plan without communication and understanding the needs of everybody, or at least it feels that way, because I think feeling valued and heard, like you said, is a core piece of what we have to kind of work on. And once you have created it and you have to change it, then it becomes, oh, we're going to do a salary increase, but we have to cut this, this, and this. Not, we've prioritized our people and this is what we're going to do. And so there has to be some kind of communication piece with the public, right? Of like, listen, we would love to do A, B, C, and D, but with a 1-2% increase from the state and making sure that our employees stay above water with inflation, we are choosing to do these things to make sure we keep great teachers and staff in our schools.
Absolutely.
I don't see how that doesn't resonate, and I don't see how that doesn't allow even the staff to realize there may be a couple of less resources, but guess what? I know that I have a vision that I will be somewhere. I have a career in Leon County School.
I can keep my lights on at home.
I'm gonna be respected, not just in words, but in some pay and working conditions. And it's just frustrating because we just had some negotiations and I said, I feel like I am like Charlie Brown and the football. It's sitting there and we go to kick and whoop, I'm flat on my back, and we as educators, and I say I want to be very clear, I am not LCTA. I am not Leona Classroom Teacher Association. I am not the decision maker. We have a board that is very involved of dedicated volunteers. We have billing representatives that are dedicated to this. We have members that give up their time,
The negotiating
dedicate,
teams, yeah.
negotiating committees and teams and all that kind of stuff. It really goes back down to the agency right now of like, what do you want to do? And understand that, you know, it's not like the classroom. Like, classroom's like, what did you do yesterday, right? You know, like, it's always supposed to have been done. But yet, in order to be successful in these, it takes time.
Yeah. One of the things that whenever I look at the budget, I guess I live in this idealistic world where we would take all of the employees and we'd figure out what all of them need to make. Mm-hmm. And then that's what we would do first in the budget. Right. And then we would work and everything else around that. I know that that's like this like idealistic world, you know, that I live in. But mm-hmm. I mean, I genuinely feel like when I am watching these board meetings and when I'm watching these negotiations, I, as someone on the outside, mm-hmm. am watching this wondering, what's going on? Why can we not pay our educators more money? Why is it that year after year, they keep getting told that there's no money and they're not receiving any raises at all? And the raises they do receive are from the state. You know, we saw that last year where the raise was from the state. This year, I think it's also from the state. Can you explain that to me a little bit about what this funding is and right. who all's included in it this year?
Right. It's unfortunate that the governor has chosen to use a gimmick as like a political tool.
Yeah.
There's no other way to put it. And that, you know, $1.6 billion in salary or whatever.
Because it sounds like
a lot. Sounds amazing. The problem is it's over 6 years, right?
Okay.
It's over a period of time. So, you know, if I told you that I was going to give you $20 and I gave you $2 and I said, well, I gave you 18 already.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, well, I thought you were going to give me $20. Like, it is intentionally manipulative.
Right. Right?
And it does not meet every employee within the district.
Okay.
It's called the teacher salary increase allocation. So what they did was they took a line item out and they just said, this is dedicated to salary.
Okay.
Of however they write the statute. At first it was about beginning teacher salary being brought up, right? Because what they wanted to do was like, look, beginning teachers, you're ranked, I think it was somewhere in the 30s, don't quote me on that.
But okay.
Like it had moved up to like, oh, this is where we are. And but yet the veteran teacher was way the heck back here and the average was close to 50.
Yeah, because I'm hearing like there are some new teachers that are getting paid the same amount as veteran teachers now.
Relatively, because what ended up happening was as you bring up the minimum salary, and you couldn't move everybody else up because you didn't have enough money.
Yeah.
It compressed all those years.
Yep.
So in the beginning, there was only $100 between each year. So for the first 17 years.
Wow.
So someone with zero experience comes in and you've got a 17-year veteran making $1,700.
More. That's it.
That's it. And so that compression takes place, right?
Yeah. I mean, even looking at the pay scale for like last year, when I looked at it last year,
mm-hmm.
it took, I think it was 22 years before you actually made 10,000 more than like the starting teacher. Mm-hmm. Like you have to be really invested
mm-hmm.
in years in order to be any kind of separation. Right. It actually may have been more than 22 years.
Well, that's all a product. Like you got to go back to Rick Scott for all this stuff, right? Because in 2011, when they did annual contracts and they got rid of what is called the PSC status, professional services contract,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of people thought once teachers get tenure, they can't be fired. And that's not true. What ended up happening was back in the 80s, they got rid of what was called continuing contract.
Okay.
So continuing contract was like 10-year tenure. When PSC status, public professional services contract, kicked in, which is the contract that I have with the state, it basically said that you had to work for 3 years, blah, blah, blah. Then you can get the PSC status. And then after that, if they have findings, if your ratings are low, if you're not cutting the mustard, they can start take disciplinary actions and they could eventually terminate you.
Okay.
The problem was, it wasn't the fast, easy way to deal with it. right?
Mm-hmm.
It required administrators to do work, to document things, to have difficult conversations with employees, which is called leadership without the responsibility of leadership. So what they decided was, we want a quick fix. We're going to do annual contract, which means at the end of every year, we can say, no, thank you for your service without any due process. That means you could have been the greatest teacher in the world. You could have been batting 1,000. But that one time that you talked to me, I didn't like it. And now you're not a good fit. But I'm not going to tell you that because then that would give a reason why. And
Yeah.
we don't give any reasons, we just non-reappoint you. Non-reappointment is a termination, right?
Wow. Okay.
And it happens every year. So now think about how vocal would a teacher be on an annual contract? Not at all. Not much,
No.
right? Because you're always wondering, am I not going to get non-reappointed because I advocated for something, because I said something?
Yeah.
The only thing that's kind of countered that is they decimated the colleges of education in the state of Florida. They've deprofessionalized teaching. They have created a salary that most people don't want to go to, right?
Right.
So now you have a vacuum. You don't have people coming into the profession.
Right.
I know, we'll get TPG to come in and provide teachers from other countries to go ahead and fill the gaps rather than properly fund education, professionalize the profession through college degrees and academia and all the things that need to take place. We go ahead and make it very rote so that there's just like a state test that you have to pass so you can teach to the test. You don't have to do some abstract,
Yeah.
student-centered things, all this stuff. And so now annual contract teachers actually have a little bit more stability because nobody's waiting in the door. I remember when I first started here, we were at the Civic Center. Hundreds, maybe 1,000 people, or who knows? It was just a lot of people interviewing for jobs.
Yeah.
And now, principals, even in our North Side schools, because a lot of times it's like, if it's not impacting me, it doesn't matter. So as long as it's just tied at one school, it's like, no, it's everybody now.
Yeah.
So it's community wide. And so like they'll have a position and there's like maybe one person that's qualified, two, three, and that have the certifications and all the other things, which is why there's a we've got a lot of teachers that are working on their, certifications right now
Yeah.
because they're in the classroom.
And what is the district doing to help them, like, I guess, get their teaching certifications?
Well, in that aspect, there's a lot of collaboration because
Okay.
it's stability, right?
Right.
So, Rebecca Salvo's working on it. There's a website that talks about who the teachers are because you have to notify and everything.
Yeah.
And there's notices of what needs to happen. And because we were bringing up some things and they were thinking about some things, they were actually asking some other districts of what they were doing to make sure that these teachers were in
Okay.
field. And so, listen, it's easy to be in a binary system of like good, bad, right, left, Democrat, Republican,
It is.
district, union. Things are far more abstract than that.
Yeah.
And it's easy to reduce it down to those things. I respect a lot of people in the district.
Yeah.
I think sometimes the processes that are in the district and a lack of distributive leadership is what is the biggest handicap.
Okay.
And I can understand how you get in that situation. COVID, I was depressed.
I think everyone was.
Everyone was like, mask, you're an idiot. Mask, I'm gonna die. Like the amount of responsibility that was going on at that time, no matter what you did, you were gonna mess up. Like that,
Yeah.
no one had ever experienced a pandemic and that kind of thing. And mentally, it was probably the lowest point in my life. And it was only because of my family and my union, family, particularly our vice president at the time, Kim Strelo, that I was able to even get to this.
Wow.
And, you know, there's times where, like, people are like, I'm not going to talk about stuff. Like, no, we got to understand, behind every one of these decisions is a person.
Yeah.
Struggling with the same existence that you are. And there was a... I had a parent one time. This was a... I was on my way to Orlando for something for the union. And I had a legacy family. I love legacy family. Like, where you teach all the kids in their family, like, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And the mom emailed me separately because I tried at the time to get the class list to everybody, to my room mom.
Okay.
And so I normally BCC all of them, but in that one I didn't, so she could get it. And this one parent had gone back and said, he's failing all our students. You know, oh my gosh, these percentages, blah, blah, blah. Now, granted, this is the first of her children that's in fifth grade. No one's ever had anything less than an A. And I was using the system that was like 0 out of 100. So I'm like, well, it's only a 10-question quiz. 0 out of 10, 90's 90, whatever. Well, the program was calculating it differently than if I put it in as 90 to 100. I had no idea.
Oh.
But there was this email that, for her fear, for her child, for her care, manifested itself in a way that blasted everybody in the class.
Wow.
So she contacts me, and I'm like, at first I'm like, what is going on? You know? It was at that time that I was like trying to figure out, like, how do I handle this situation? And this is my technique. I when someone is kind of that, I just go, I imagine you when you were born, when you were that bundling joy that everyone, you know, was just so happy to see. And that, you know, there's like an analogy someone did, like, you take a tape and you roll it backwards and you roll it on the ground and it picks up all these things, mm-hmm. all the things in life that you experience. If you go this way, you get different stuff on you, and that way have brought this person to here. And that doesn't mean that they're good, bad, or whatever.
Yeah.
But we just have to have a conversation about the situation. So stay calm.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to take it personally. And I would like to think that I do it all the time, but I don't. You know, I'm
it's
a
hard.
Human.
Yeah.
It's very hard. It's very hard. But by the end of the year, the parents like, thank you so much for everything you did and blah, 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 you know. And you can be cynical about it if you want to, but I was appreciative that, like, we were able to get through whatever that little situation was.
Yeah.
But our first year teachers don't know that stuff. I mm-hmm. experienced that, like, I don't remember, like, maybe 15 years in the classroom when it happened.
Yeah.
And if I had done it my first year, I would have been, like, bonkers. Because
yeah.
I would have been internalizing this parent and what the parent's going to tell the principal, and I'm an annual contract teacher, and what's it going to mean, and all these other
right, things. Right.
So I think there's a certain level of outside of communication, a certain level of humanity that we have to have with each
yeah.
other. Like I said, some days I'm better than others, but I am really, really trying.
Yeah. And one of the things that I remind myself, too, is that everyone has their own perspective
yeah.
cultivated by their individual walks of life, right?
Exactly.
And so I think that that is always a way to kind of grind, like, to ground me into mm-hmm. thinking, like, hey, this is just a person.
Right.
And they have a perspective that's mm-hmm. valid,
right.
you know, and meeting them somewhere in the middle and finding out mm-hmm. where that middle ground is where it's really important. That's kind of where all these budget negotiations
right.
come down to, whether it's for the state or whether it's with the local
mm-hmm.
and having these conversations and really meeting each other with good intentions,
right.
both having good intentions at the table. That's kind of where we make this progress at.
And there's an element that you also have to keep in mind as an educator. Many parents see their child as a reflection of them.
Yeah, that's a good
and
point.
And when you have some feedback that's not positive, you're not a good parent. I'm not a good person. Whatever it
mm-hmm.
is that gets internalized. There's a certain level of honesty that people need to have in that situation, right? It's hard. It's very hard because, you know, early on when I was an educator, I would never have said anything. But I've also had the same conversations with a parent where we're sitting down, kids not in the room during the parent conference. They would stay outside and then they come in for us to have a conversation if we needed to afterwards, right? That joint piece. Because I didn't want to embarrass the student, you know, so we talked. And the parent said something along the lines of, like, well, you know, I wasn't good at math, so Timmy's not good at math. And as an educator, I have to find a way to couch that and say, you know, I appreciate that information, but we're not here to talk about you. We're here to talk about Timmy. You know, Timmy can be really good at math, but when we hear things that negative, like, oh, you're not going to be good at this, you're not going to get that, it then creates a self-fulfilling prophecy sometimes rather than here's how we get to a better spot. And that's hard for a parent to hear, you know. And just so that this isn't like I'm somehow perfect, I've had some things that I've changed lately about myself, and I've had to go to apologize to my own children as an educator, as a parent, that like some of my choices in life and what I did as a parent that I regret, and I'm sorry. Because when you're parenting, you don't have the luxury sometimes to sit back and reflect. You're just on like survival mode. So it really causes you to have to think about things in a different way once you get to a certain spot where things do slow down and you're not changing diapers and doing this, that, and the other thing. So, you know, it's being a reflective teacher in person is very important to me. It was the core of the program at ProTeach at UF was being reflective. And there were some hypocrisies in some of the things with that, you know, where we had a science method teacher that was like showing us Mr. Wizard. And I'm like, dude, it's like 1994. What are you doing with Mr. Wizard, man? You know, and then, but there were some really good educators, grad students, and things that really had you think. The key piece is, and this was one of the foundationals. You want to be a teacher? Are you a teacher? And you would go, yeah, I'm a teacher. Like, you're a facilitator. See, a teacher in the path is pulling you up in a certain direction. Facilitator is taking things, obstacles off the students so that they can move up the mountain themselves so that there's some level of self-sufficiency. And so these are the conversations that are really important outside of union stuff in terms of education that I think we need to have some more discussions about within our schools. And how do we create statute at a state level, policies at a district level that allow us to do those things so that we're not, you know, chasing some data number and turning kids into numbers and things like that.
And a lot of like the people who a lot of our neighbors who read the page are parents, you know, and they I've heard a lot of support for teachers too. So what are some ways that I guess we can help you guys with that?
Well, I think one of the things, you know, okay, so there's a vote. Never, never more than ever in the last year has it ever, like, I think it was probably November last year where I was just like, oh my gosh, it's elections. Right? That's all it is. And the thing is, a lot of times people go, well, I'm not going to run, or I'm not going to be a part of this, or, you know, I'm not getting engaged, or what's my vote matter? It's the start of everything. It's where the statutes come from. It's all do, and there can be a juxtaposition because, you know, I'm an independent. Like, I'm not a Democrat or Republican. Been since 18. That's how punk I am. I'm not, no one tells me what to do, kind of thing. And I've had to learn hard lessons because of that. So, anyway, but at the end of the day, I have friends on all sides of the spectrum of the political spectrum. But the one thing that is common with all of them is integrity. You know, we can have an honest conversation and disagree without it becoming ugly. And you can get from that binary system to a more abstract spot. So I would say vote. When you look at the candidates that are coming up, you know, which ones are really about doing something positive for education for the state? And, you know, sometimes people go, I'm just going to hit all the R's or I'm going to hit all the D's. You got to do some homework.
Yeah,
You
I
know,
agree
you
with
got to
that.
make sure that you're voting for the right people, because it's about principles and it's about purpose and it's about their platform.
Yeah.
And if you focus on those things, you should be okay. But at the end of the day, we have to stop complaining about there are no good choices. Maybe you're the choice and
Right.
you just don't realize it. Like, and if you don't feel like you're ready yet, then what are you doing to get yourself in a position? Like, what is your purpose? So like one of the big things for me right now is like memento mori, which is from dust to dust, right? We all gonna go somewhere, and there's a perspective you get after 50. I'll be 52 in October, right? I have less years than I've already had, which means that every day is a day to make the most of it, because I don't know if I'm gonna get another. And if that's the way that we kind of help people get to a better spot, that's perfect. So vote's the first one. Second one is financially. There is no quick fix other than the November ballot. I
Yeah.
think this is where we have an opportunity. You know, there's a lot of businesses and people that are like, no, I'm against the millage increase. I'm against it. I'm against it. Let me put it in perspective, okay? The millage increase, the MOU that the board's going to do an executive session on Monday. We're going to negotiate at 8 a.m. on Tuesday, the 11th, has a proposal that is anywhere from $3,000 to $10,000 per educator starting next year, 27, 28. That recruits more people, that stabilizes the people that are in here. People see a vision of a better community and stuff. And for folks that don't have their kids in public schools, you know, we understand. But this is about the community. It's not, we have a very me-centric society right now. But what teachers do when those kids come in is they don't go, I'm going to teach you and you, but not you. Like, we don't pick and choose. It's everybody comes into public education and is, you know, is supposed to be treated similarly so that they have the same ability to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness.
Well, and it's one of the things that I think about is the collective, right? Because when everyone in the collective is benefiting, it kind of helps everyone else. You know, we have a good public education system, then more people want to move here, and then
Businesses,
businesses profit,
economy, you
right?
pay your teachers more, they're spending more money within the community at the places that are small
And
businesses and
even
things.
if you have a home, even if you homeschool, or you go to private school, more people in our community means more tax dollars for more parks, more tax dollars for more swimming pools, for more activities, for more shows. So either way, we all benefit when everyone else is benefiting. And that's kind of like with the pay with the teachers. If all the teachers are getting paid more and all the staff at all the schools are getting paid more, then they can spend more money. When they spend more money in the local government and the local economy, then we have better businesses, better local businesses, stronger local businesses. And guess what? More people come.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the difference between scratching and feels good and understanding what hard the only way to do hard work is to do hard work. That was one of our posts recently. Like, we talk about rigor for students, but we don't really want rigor for ourselves. So it's a bad example. You know, it's a do as I say, not as I do kind of thing. And I think that, you know, there is value in that rigor, in that hard work that makes things easy eventually. You know, but you only maintain it by doing the hard work. You don't ever get to do this now, right? Or I've done, like, there's always like a because of this I can do this. There is no because of this I can do this now. It's just I want to do this. And I think it's important for us to try and remember that we have to do things more like that if we really want to make a dent in what's going on. So this millage increase, just in perspective for folks, like say you have a $300,000 house, right? Your homestead exemption is $50,000. You're being taxed on $250,000. That means your taxes go up $250 spread out. Yeah, I mean, it's for a year.
Yeah.
Less than a dollar a day, you know, just like the commercial. And you get to stabilize the future of the students that are in this district. Right?
Yeah.
That's powerful. $3,000 to $10,000 for those educators to make sure we have good people in there because they're ranked 50th in the nation.
Yeah.
And then we're even below the state average locally. So we're below 50th in the nation.
Yeah.
Right now. So, you know, want to thank the school board, superintendent, everybody that's pushing this through and getting it going. But this didn't just happen.
Mm-hmm.
This has been like a 3-year project for us at
wow.
least. We've
wow.
passed proposals for millage increases for years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of what the rigor, right?
Yeah.
Doing hard work, but it doesn't just happen.
Right.
And
from the outside, it looks like it did, right?
Right.
From the outside perspective, it's like, oh, they just decided one day to pass this and now they're passing it. But there's not that understanding of that back end
mm-hmm.
and how much work was put in on the back end to get us to this part where it looks like.
And this is not to say, look what LCTA did, because I think that's also the other thing. There's a lot of people that want to be in the front of the ticker tape parade, right?
Mm-hmm.
Take credit for everything. Or look what I did. Me, mm-hmm. me, I. I've said this to Superintendent Hannah. When do we get to kind of walk side by side and show like we're all together for a common purpose?
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be one person over another.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care who gets credit because I know the impact.
In 50 years, no one's going to know, right?
No one's going to know.
In 50 years, you're not going to still be leading LCTA.
Oh, no.
He's not still going to be the superintendent.
Right.
So at the end of the day, we're just thinking about what's best for our educators and our
right.
future educators and our students and
mm-hmm.
our future students and our community and our parents and anyone else that – you know, is affected by it.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're very excited about the possibilities.
Yeah.
Between that, between the November elections of being pro-public education or just pro-education, because we know the vouchers are there. It's going to be homeschool vouchers and private schools and everything. But we got to get that accountability part under control so that any taxpayer knows that their dollars are not going to a Disney cruise and that's what school is this week or whatever. Like, there are some outliers
yeah.
that are out there, and we don't need that to detract from the better work that we're doing, because that also happens. Like, you can take one example, and it, like, gives everyone a bad rap. That's in, like, you know, only one drop of oil.
Right.
Thing. But that's the clickbait stuff. That's
mm-hmm.
the stuff that people chase and the people go after. And I cannot say that as a leader – that I haven't necessarily kind of done that at some point in time. You know, the Stoics talk about, you know, the greatest thing you do is not become your enemy, right? So, like, I don't care what other people do anymore.
Yeah.
This is how we're going to operate moving forward as long as I'm president. And I just want folks to understand that drive the train. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'll be the front of it, but drive the train. But the only way to do that, though, is to save the contract and get the 60% membership.
Yeah.
Because the state has told you, you have to. They've given you no choice. And that includes protective planning. That includes your benefits. That includes your pay schedule. That includes your, you know, we've got language in there that we put in there that says that any educator, without taking leave, can go to their child's for 2 hours, their own child's school performances and meets and,
wow.
meetings and things like that.
Yeah.
And so
all of that would just...
All that goes away. And it becomes whatever the district says. And if you look at the last 2 years, not to harp on the budget part, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it is no money, no money.
Yeah.
And then there was money. And so... We're just asking, can we try to find a way to account for the people understanding
mm-hmm.
that, yes, we are here for the right reasons. But that doesn't mean that we should be living in poverty
Right.
or unable to feed our own children.
Well, passion doesn't mean that you should be poor.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just, I'm hopeful
Yeah.
because I think there's a lot of good things that we can do moving forward.
Yeah.
But it's going to take consistency.
And my thing too, like going into the union thing, is that if they're saying there's no money now and you have a collective bargaining unit and a negotiation team, what's going to happen if that's not there and that's not in place? Because then you're not going to have anybody who is going to be able to show up at every single meeting about pay, who's going to be advocating for every single, teacher or educator that they're representing. You're not going to have that collective team
And
to address it.
we've got a teacher evaluation review committee where we provide feedback on the evaluation. Gone. Like so
Everything
many,
would be gone.
everything
Yeah.
would be gone. And that contract is 50 years in the making.
Wow.
And so what you have to do, if the contract goes away, you have to sit out a year, meaning you can't even apply for the bargaining rights for a year, right?
Wow.
And then if you do get the bargaining rights back, it starts with a blank sheet of paper. You have to negotiate
Everything.
everything again. And there are things within that contract that I'm sure that they would like maybe not to have that would be
Up for
very,
negotiation again.
would be very difficult to get back in the very first time back at the table. So you would have to take 50 years to build it back up again.
Wow.
And that is the unconscionable thing that this legislature did to the hardworking people of this state.
Yeah.
And I understand there's some people that are just anti-union. I get that part, right? We're a part of AFT, NEA, FEA, all this stuff. They will tell you I'm not always happy with them.
Yeah.
Just as my own members are not always happy with me,
Right.
right? Like it's a part of it.
And I think the thing to remember too is there's bad people or corruption in any organization. You have any kind of organization, there's going to be corruption, there's going to be bad people. And I think that whenever you start making this blanket statement, oh, it's the entire organization, and you stop looking at the individuals, I mean, you're my neighbor. Right? Like you're Scott, you're my neighbor. We sit down, we talk, we have conversations. I know you. And if I start looking at you through this filter of, oh, he's corrupt, then, we're no longer neighbors. You're now my enemy. And I think that that's kind of like the big scheme of everything, right? Is to is to make you and I kind of fight each other. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you're gonna see corruption in everything. You have a pilot who's flying a plane who might be a bad guy. You have police officers, you have firefighters, you have paramedics, you have doctors, you see it in every single field.
The bell curve's the bell curve for a reason, right?
There you go. There you go.
And I think the other part is like, saw something recently about the devil's advocate, with Keanu Reeves and all that stuff. And like the whole thing is about vanity, right? And at the end he chooses, oh, I'm not gonna do it, right? And then a reporter's like, oh, you gotta tell the story, you gotta tell the story, you gotta tell the story. And then he's like, okay, I'll tell the story. And when the reporter turns, it's Al Pacino, the devil again. Because it's vanity of it, hubris and vanity, pride is something all of us have to deal with.
Yeah.
And weakness is just part of being like that. That's part of being human. And I don't think sometimes people understand what it means to kind of have like absolute power corrupts absolutely kind of
Yeah.
thing, right?
Yeah.
That like there's a point in time where you have to choose Marcus Aurelius, like to. I gotta do me and I can't go down these roads. But that goes back to I can have friends on every level of the political spectrum as long as you hold that integrity line, right?
Right.
And so, and it's not a binary system. It's abstract. It's like it's all over the place. And so, I'm just excited about this school year.
Yeah.
I'm excited about this election cycle. I'm excited about the millage increase. The teacher salary increase allocation for this year is baloney. 10 years and above have to be a full-time classroom teacher. Oh, 10 years and above, only in public schools. But for a group of people who like talk about private schools and all of this, homeschool stuff, and then a teacher comes in our contract gives them full complete years of service in those private schools, right? So you talk 10 years in a private school, you come to Leon County Schools, our contract gives you 10 years of service. They're not a part of the money. So the same state that wants vouchers to go to private schools won't even recognize those private school teachers as teachers if they came into public education to receive this teacher salary increase allocation. It's hypocrisy.
Wow.
So, we're going to continue to negotiate. And if we go to impasse over salary, this is the same thing. Many principals are like, grievances are bad. It's a scarlet letter. It's a process. Impasse is a process. It is not, the world is on fire.
Yeah. All right. Well, that we'll go ahead and wrap it up. And thank you so much for having
Thank you for having me.
this
I
and
appreciate
being on
it.
the pilot episode. So, all
Woo!
right. Thank you.
Bye.